Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solaria Report. This is John Titus and Catherine Austin Fitz. Welcome to 2023. It's a new year, and it's an exciting year because things are changing. There's a lot of pushback. What's our theme, John?
Our theme is Mr. Reality versus Mr. Global. Mr. Reality is the visiting team. Mr. Global is the home team. Mr. Global now has a challenger. And Mr. Reality is showing up knocking at his door.
Everywhere you turn, it's exciting. It's exciting.
Yeah, and as usual, we got a couple of stories that sort of underscore the theme, but we'll get to them.
Okay, well, let's dive in.
But diving in, we're going to start off with something same old, war in the Ukraine. You know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Here we go from CNBC. Zelensky, I'm pretty sure that's not how you spell Zelensky with two Y's. I think I would have noticed that before. Zelensky, BlackRock CEO Fink, agreed to coordinate Ukraine investment. Oh, joy. What do we have? There it is, the two Y's again. Maybe it is right. Zelensky and Fink had agreed to focus in the near term on coordinating the efforts of all potential investors and participants in the reconstruction of our country, channeling investment into the most relevant and impactful sectors of the Ukraine economy. I'm laughing. I can't stand that word, impactful. But it tells you all you need to know about all the money being pumped into the Ukraine. There's Uncle Larry. Uncle Larry was right there during the pandemic QE, like helping the Fed. Hey, I'm here as Mr. Helper. We're going to help you decide which bonds to buy. And there he is helping Zelensky decide where to spend his money.
So here's what I read. When I read that story, I read is, now that we've laundered all your tax dollars through the Ukraine, we're going to take your pension and retirement money and have Larry channel it into controlling and building our new Valhalla in the Ukraine.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I think that's a very reasonable interpretation of that.
Right. Right. Yep. So whether it's your tax dollar or your retirement savings, you need to get your money out of the central systems because it's not going to where you think it ought to.
No. Right.
No.
Right. It's being parked in parking lots you don't want to know about over in Ukraine.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. And that's our only story this week on Ukraine. There's a lot of, as far as the war on the ground, the consensus view of analysts seems to be we're in a period of waiting for the freeze, for the ground to freeze, and then we'll see what happens. We'll see what Russia does. So,
I did send you a story this morning about the Ukraine. I don't know if you've seen it. It's from the Wall Street Journal. Russia claims that 89 Russian soldiers were killed because they didn't follow the rules about not turning on their cell phone.
Yeah, I saw that.
Right. And, you know, that's a message not just for the Russian soldiers, but for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. The cell phones, they betray you every time.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move to the space military global turf wars. And the first story from your neck of the woods, the Netherlands, has had enough of U.S. pressure not to sell advanced chip-making machines to China. Now, the author has a certain take on this, and you and I can discuss whether that's going to pan out the way the author thinks. So what's the backdrop to this story? There's a company called SMIC, which is China's largest chip manufacturing company. It's currently right now at a technological level sufficient for the 7-nanometer process, which means it is still years behind Taiwan's TSMC and Korea's Samsung, which have already reached the level of 3 nanometers. The most sophisticated 7-nanometer chips, which China can do now, they're not suitable for smartphones, and obviously that's a huge market. Okay, but here you have the Netherlands. It's got a company called ASML, the key global manufacturer of the extreme ultraviolet lithographic machines, which are necessary for the production of most advanced chips. And these machines are big. They're the size of buses. They weigh 200 tons. Imagine they're probably bigger than buses and cost over $150 million a piece. And it takes a long time to get delivery. So now, what the U.S. is doing, it's pressuring the Dutch government to prevent delivery of these machines to Chinese companies like SMIC. And the Dutch are slowly starting to see since their appeasement of the American side is quite suffocating to their economy. And here's where the author speculates. He says, I think the U.S. will probably have to give up its pressure campaign in the end.
I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that either.
You know, the Netherlands has worked very hard to accommodate the United States.
Yeah.
And what it's beginning to understand is maybe that's not such a good idea. And, you know, because Russia was a huge trade partner before the Ukraine war started. And the Netherlands keeps, you know, is constantly getting whipsawed in the middle. Now, the company that they're referring to that makes these machines is arguably the most advanced in the world. It's a remarkable company. And to limit that company to just being able to sell to whoever the Americans say is a form, you know, it's an extent of bullying that I don't think can be tolerated. But I can imagine that the Dutch are seething.
Yeah, it can't be tolerated. This from the continent where your gas pipeline was just blown up.
Right.
By Uncle You-Know-Who.
Right.
And, you know, I don't see any riots in the streets about that.
Well, it's the productivity rebellion. The productive are tired of being controlled. They're tired of having their productivity destroyed by corrupt people.
So. Yeah, so I guess what's the red line? You know, where is it? It wasn't gas. We're going to cut your gas off. You know, you laid down for that.
So Mr. Reality versus Mr. Global is basically a giant negotiation to figure out where the red line is.
Yeah, right.
Right.
And thus far in the negotiations, there's not even the adumbration of a red line anywhere.
Right.
You get articles like this, that's, you know, there's no evidence.
Right.
Okay. All right, moving on to space military global turf wars. This next one, what is going on? Netanyahu returns to power in 6th term as prime minister. Netanyahu was sworn in for the 6th time as prime minister of Israel on Thursday, having been propelled back to the premiership by a coalition of ultranationalists and religious parties that will wield unprecedented power. That coalition aims to expand Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank, give lawmakers greater control over the top court, and make changes to the matters of religion and state, all moves to the right. His coalition will include 6 right-wing parties, 5 of which are religiously conservative, and will control 64 of 120 seats in the parliament. The new government is set to be the most right-wing in Israel's history. There's a lot more to that article, but the drift to the right is clear.
Right-wing is now code for organized crime.
Right. Netanyahu's turning the dial up to 11.
This is like making Willie Horton the controller of the currency.
Yeah. Right.
You don't know what to say. It's like, do we really think a country would, I mean, if you look at what he did to the country during the pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who engineered and led a mass atrocity and got kickbacks on it.
Yeah. Right. Now, the journal articles goes on and says, you know, there's been a drift to the right among the electorate. You know, whether that's true, no. I don't know. I wonder.
No, if you want to read the funny thing, I sent it to you. The Council on Foreign Relations, Foreign Affairs came out with an article about this and just tore into Netanyahu. And I wanted to say to them, why'd you let the neocons get the bit in the teeth and get a, you know, it was your failure to act and stop this way back in the beginning that let this go on. You know, so.
I did see that article. You sent it to me. I looked at it and I wondered, like, what, you know, really? You don't like the guy? And what's going on? And then another article comes out later that day, which you and I didn't talk about, which is, you know, Netanyahu's buddying up to Putin now.
Yeah. Oh, he's always been buddying up to Putin.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, they're going to build Valhalla and, you know, Putin's part of the play.
Yeah. I think that's kind of how it looks, unfortunately. Yep. But anyway, let's move on. Let's just move on actually to FedWatch monetary control. This first one is an infographic. This is great. I love this. except my car isn't here. The longest lasting cars in miles. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see one name over and over and over. Sedans and hatchbacks,
Toyota,
Toyota, you know, you see, we're going to see that symbol a lot there. But Chevy's right in there. The Camry's in there again. So SUVs. So look at these numbers. The Avalon, 245,000 miles. This next bit surprised me. This SUVs and their longevity, like, whoa.
Right.
Look at this. The first two are Toyotas, the Sequoia and Land Cruiser, at 280 and 297,000 miles.
Right.
Wow. So there's Toyota. They're doing really well. All down here, electric cars. You get a Tesla, it lasts 134,000 miles.
Right.
You know, half as long as everything else.
Right.
But what do you make of all that? That's a good company.
So Toyota's a great company. And their accomplishments are extraordinary. And I was surprised to not see Nissan higher in those rankings, because I had three Nissans that I bought in 2000. And I drove them. We drove them to 300,000 plus. And one, the Nissan place had told me, you know, you could get this. They had one Nissan Pathfinder that went to 400,000. But ours kind of conked out at 300,000, and then we had to redo it to refurbish. And it's now back on the road. It's a 2000. It's back on the road. So if you look at the quality of the Toyota product and the Japanese car product, it's extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary. And if you are a busy person, having a reliable car that can go a long period of time is a great thing. So
yeah,
it makes a very, very big difference, particularly because most people buy used now, I think. You know, the economics of buying something slightly used are clearly very compelling.
Yeah.
So getting a car that, in terms of maintenance, is unbelievably reliable and will go on and on and on, it's a great, you know, it's one of the things you can do for your financial picture, which is a great thing to do. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's a 93 Camry that's, you know, one long, there's some Toyota back
from really
a long time ago. Yeah, that's the longest lasting. Anyway, over the holidays, I had two relatives who travel a lot in business, and they sort of discovered that each of them, when they go to the airport and get a rental car, they go to the Toyota.
Right.
They're like, oh, really? You too? And they love them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, let's keep it going. The next story from The Economist. Boy, this is big. Five financial trends that 2022 killed. Okay, so let's just run through them quickly. Cheap money, that's over. Interest rates, they're no longer zero. I think we know that. Death of the bull market. Yep. Look at this. This surprised me. From 2009 to its peak, 2021, S&P 500 index shares, it rose by 600%.
Right.
Over. Okay. Evaporating capital. You used to have QE. Well, now the Fed and the Bank of England have put their bond buying programs into reverse. Fact. For the time being, value beats growth. This is a big one, because if you're a value investor, there is no real value to be found in a market that just keeps going up with PE ratios of 50 and 100, but now it's back. Crypto.
Well, but let me just say one thing. Value beats growth means you have to have a real business. You have to have a real business where your revenues can cover your costs and you can produce a profit and a dividend.
Right.
It has to be a real business.
You can't have a business that depends on constant appreciation for your revenue. That doesn't, that's going to work until it doesn't. And then crypto implodes again. There was a couple implosions this year in crypto, but FTX, this is the most recent. I found it interesting, though, that The Economist is sticking its neck out on like that, and like crypto implodes again. I don't think crypto is over.
No, I don't think it's over. I mean, if you were the central bankers, would you want it over yet?
No.
Right. Why would you?
No, it's not over. They're going to use it as a vehicle to get into CBDC.
Yeah, of course.
I can almost guarantee that, you know.
Right.
So crypto's not done. That's a fiction. Anyway. Okay, let's keep it going in FedWatch. Next story, Wall Street Journal. Pandemic loans are coming due, but some businesses aren't ready to repay. Now, they give an example. They give a series of examples in this article. Let's just start with the Wright IMC, based in Allen, Texas, borrowed $150,000 from the Small Business Administration's COVID disaster loan program 2 years ago. A 20-person digital marketing agency made its first $1,600 loan payment this month, just as ad sales are softening. So bad timing. You know, here's the deal. The SBA issued roughly $390 billion in COVID disaster loans to nearly 4 million small businesses and nonprofits. That's a big number. But unlike forgivable loans issued through the Federal Paycheck Protection Program, the disaster loans were designed to be repaid. In other words, a lot of people, and I know a few, the paycheck protection, the so-called loan, they just wrote it off and they don't have to pay it. But now you've got, you know, bad timing for people with a Small Business Administration regular business loans because inflation and supply chain challenges and a tight labor market have made repayments more daunting than expected. You're now got declining revenue and suddenly the loan payments due.
Right.
That's the deal.
Right.
And they give a lot of examples in that article of businesses, small businesses.
So one of my favorite quotes is from Franklin Sanders. He says, all government money comes with a sock in the jaw.
Yeah, right.
So when they came out with this, I was like, I don't want to know from it. I don't want to touch it. I do not want to have a legal, I don't want to engage in legal transactions and formal transactions with the U.S. government. I do not want to owe them money. So.
No, you don't. Right. But 4 million people, 4 million businesses didn't follow your advice. And, right. You know, you can't fault them. I mean, I'm sure the vast majority of them needed the money.
Right.
And did what they had to do to survive. But now they got to pay the piper and it's tough, you know.
Right.
But most
companies need are equity. They don't need debt. That's a trap.
Yeah. So that's a trap. Exactly. Okay. The next story, what is going on here? Wells Fargo reaches $3.7 billion deal with regulators over consumer banking. You know, the HSBC laundered money for drug dealers and terrorists, and the fine was $1.9 billion. $3.7 billion? Like, what did you...
It's kickbacks.
What, were you cutting your customers' heads off? I mean, honestly, but anyway, here's the journal story. I'm really unclear as to the scope of what happened. The bank illegally assessed fees and interest charges on loans for cars and homes. Some consumers had their vehicles illegally repossessed, while others had overdraft fees unlawfully applied. The agency said Wells Fargo has been working for years to resolve a series of regulatory matters stemming from a fake accounts scandal in 2016. Of course, you know that one. Afterward, other problems surfaced across the bank, including in its mortgage and auto lending businesses. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau said the bank's actions span over a decade. So, you know, this is a company that was creating real loans in people's names behind their back. That they got fined, I think, $1 billion for that one. And wasn't enough.
They're padding bills. They're padding their servicing bills. They're charging you fees. And here's the problem, because I've had to deal with this as a consumer. They're charging you fees, and if you look at the fees they're charging and how much time you're going to spend on their telephone system, you know, going from voicemail to voicemail, trying to find a human being to deal with it, it's cheaper to just let it slide, right?
Right,
So you have millions of people for a decade letting it slide because they don't want to go to war, you know, on your voicemail system. And they're skimming. It's a skim. The other guys who do it are telecommunications companies. I mean, I have stories that'll turn your hair. And I finally just decided to go to war. Okay, I'm going to spend all day listening to your voicemail system. I'm going to get somebody.
I'm laughing because I dated a bartender in New York, and she had all this cash, and she banked at Bank of America. I said, "Don't, you're making a mistake." And she would anyway. So she was the kind of person who would like, "I'll stay on the phone 6 hours over $5." You're not taking my money.
Yeah, you are taking your money. 5 hours times her hourly wage.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Anyway.
Don't do business with criminals. Why is this so hard?
I know. That's a thing. There's an easy solution here.
Right. Walk. Get yourself a great bank. You deserve a great bank. Everybody deserves a great bank.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Everybody deserves a great bank, not Bank of America. Wrong one. I walked into Bank of America one time because a friend banked there, not the New York bartender, but a guy in L.A. and I was going to wire him some money. He needed a quick fix. I said, I'll just wire it. What do you back? So I'm going to Bank of America. I said, hey, I want to wire a guy some money. I got some cash here. Just can you, you know, wire? What's your wiring? What's your wire transfer fee? No, we can't tell you that. I said, what? So in other words, I'm going to hand you the money and you're going to wire and then you're going to tell me what the fee is. And he said, yeah. I said, you guys are criminals. Get just. Get out of here. Get out of here. Anyway, okay, let's keep it going. This the next one speaks to the power banks. Let's talk about another criminal bank, arguably bigger than Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase.
Yeah.
This is from Mail Online in the UK. U.S. Virgin Islands Attorney General is fired just days after she sued JP Morgan Chase, accusing the bank of pulling the levers in Jeffrey Epstein's sex crimes and turning a blind eye as he abused minors at his villa. So let's watch this story. This is interesting. The AG's name is George, okay? I think it's Denise George. Okay, George has served as the territory's attorney general for 4 years. She filed a massive lawsuit on Tuesday against JP Morgan, accusing the bank of knowingly providing and pulling the levers through which Epstein's recruiters and victims were paid. She did not warn Brian, the governor, of her intent to file the lawsuit, and therein supposedly lies the rub. Brian didn't like that because George here, she had reached a settlement of more than $105 million in sex trafficking against the estate of Epstein, who owned a private island in the territory where he abused underage girls. So she'd already settled with Epstein, and then she turns around and goes after J.P. Morgan. Seems okay to me. But this guy, the governor, he doesn't like it.
Okay, so I'm just going to be the bad guy here.
Yeah.
This is high-octane speculation. In a million years, I do not believe that Brian was the guy who got her fired. Brian is the face.
Right.
Because the guy who got her fired wanted to hide behind a black face.
Right. Well, okay, so let's go back to the story. That's a very good point. Remember, she said the allegation in the complaint is you knew about Jeffrey Epstein's activities, JP Morgan Chase. Okay? You knew, and you didn't do anything. Let's go back
but
to the
story.
But it's
not the governor who appoints the attorney general. Department of Justice controls who's the attorney general, right?
That would be correct, yeah.
Yeah.
She's, in other words, that's if you
Merrick.
Look at her,
that's Merrick who fired her.
Yeah. If you look at her background, she got her law degree at Howard.
Right.
I looked her up. I was like, is she an American? Yeah, she's an American attorney because it's an American territory.
Merrick fired her, and he's hiding behind the governor because the governor has a black face. That's what that's about.
So now let's go back to the story where she said, you knew JP. I think you're right for the what reason we're going to see right now. She said, JP Morgan Chase, you knew what was going on.
Right.
JP Morgan responds in court filings on Friday responding to the lawsuit. JP Morgan said it did not participate in or benefit from sex trafficking by its former client, JP. They don't say we didn't know. They just say, we didn't participate.
That's a lie. Well, they benefited, hugely.
Of course they did. Of course they did.
I don't know. To me, this is very extraordinary because, I dare say the Virgin Island, the government of the Virgin Island probably has their bank accounts not in their sovereign state bank, but at JP Morgan Chase. So, this is the problem. The U.S. government has has the New York Fed as its depository, and the New York Fed uses JP Morgan Chase as agent because JP Morgan Chase and Citibank and its big member banks are its owners. So, sovereignty is going to come back to whether or not you have a sovereign bank or not, or whether you're your financial transactions depend on these organizations.
The U.S. government has accounts at any bank that wants to participate in what's called the Treasury Tax and Loan Program.
Right.
That's commercial banks. But its main account that it operates from ever since the global financial crisis has been what's called its TG8 account at the Fed.
Right.
That changed during the financial crisis. But anyway, but you're right. JP Morgan's a major player in this.
Right.
You know, and they're a major New York bank. In the second district.
Yeah, you can't regulate or enforce against the bank that's holding your deposits.
Yeah,
Right.
Well, you can, but you know, the problem is the owners of JP Morgan Chase. JP Morgan isn't the only thing they own.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. They own a lot more than JP Morgan Chase.
Including people who have guns.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay, let's go another kind of dark bank story. This is from Deutsche Bank, who says in a document, a certain degree of eco dictatorship will be necessary. So this is actually discovered. This guy, a writer, discovered a document published in January of 2021 by Deutsche Bank Research entitled What We Must Do to Rebuild. If we really want to achieve, this block quote is from Deutsche Bank, says, if we really want to achieve climate neutrality, we need to change our behavior in all these areas of life. That means that carbon prices will have to rise considerably in order to nudge people to change their behavior. I know that eco-dictatorship is a nasty word, but we may have to ask ourselves the question whether and to what extent we may be willing to accept some kind of eco-dictatorship in the form of regulatory law in order to move toward climate neutrality. And this guy, the author, points out, he says, when we have to ask ourselves whether and to what extent we may be willing to accept some kind of eco-dictatorship, I don't think Deutsche Bank has a net zero referendum in mind. There's going to be no choice in the matter. That's just what they're going to do.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But so, remember, corporate jets are not included.
Yeah. Corporate jets are not included. But that gives you an idea, you know, this whole ecosystem and the green movement, the whole thing is just a nose of wax that's designed to give banks, you know, unlimited discretion in what they do with people's money. Right?
Well, but it's also to control. It's a social credit system for the financial train tracks. And it's interesting to watch the extent to which Mr. Reality is not buying the Kool-Aid. It's really this, you know, climate change is an area where the pushback is the strongest because it's basically, it reminds me of a fight between engineers and lawyers. The engineers are looking at the lawyers and saying, you know, I don't care how many marshmallow fluffs you invent out of your imagination. We're dealing with reality.
Right.
And,
right,
you know, this doesn't work for reality.
Right.
Right. So
I was watching a movie the other night called Pentagon Wars. Did you ever see that? It's about the development of the Bradley tank. It's from...
No, I haven't seen that.
1998. It's hilarious. I saw it in a comment section. So I'm watching it. They're building this Bradley tank. It's a transport vehicle. Uh-huh. And these guys, all these private contractors, want all this stuff added to it because it'll pad their bottom line. And he's like, well, why don't we put more ammunition in here over in this? And the guy's like, hey, you know, there's not enough room for this. The guy's like, sure, there's room. Just have less guys, less passengers in it, and just put more ammo in it. The guy's like, sir, it's a transport vehicle. And the guy says, well, so just make an extra trip. What's the difference? I'd never heard of that movie, and it's got a lot of actors in it who you go, I know that guy. I know that guy. I know her, you know,
yeah.
a lot of those, you know, regulars in there. Anyway, it's good.
It reminds me of the one with Nicolas Cage and who's the Ukraine arms dealer.
I don't know.
I forget what the name of that one is. Let me see if I can find it. We had it in Let's Go to the Movies. It's hysterical. I mean, it shows you too much about, how the world really works on arms.
Yeah, that's Pentagon Wars. This is how things are done in the Pentagon.
Wait a minute. Let's see. It's not coming up. Wait a minute. It's really funny. Lord of War. Let's Go to the Movies in March 21st, 2022.
I remember the poster.
Yeah, it's hysterical.
With Nicolas Cage's face.
Nicolas Cage is so funny. You should see it.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I'll check it out. Yeah.
You would enjoy that one. Okay.
All right, let's keep it going. Let's go to now Mr. Reality knocking at Mr. Global's door along the lines, the exact lines you were just talking about, which is the pushback on climate. Here we go from the Gothamist. Snow go for New York City's electric garbage trucks that can't handle winter weather. So what's up here? You're talking about trucks here. Used for curbside trash collection, the department's current rear loader truck fleet runs on diesel and is outfitted with plows to clear streets during the snow season. So they double up. They're trash collectors and they clear the streets during snow season. But now the problem is electric trucks tested by sanitation have not lasted longer than 4 hours plowing snow before running out of power. And the new electric trucks will be used for trash collection, but not plowing snow. So they can't do double duty. Why not? Because we found that they could not plow snow effectively. They basically conked out after 4 hours. We need them to go 12 hours. Sanitation Commissioner Jessica Tisch said, told the city council last month. So there you go. Your electric trucks, great idea, doesn't work.
Not a great idea. Things that don't work is not a great idea.
Yeah, right.
But it's nice. Green. It's green.
It's green.
It's green.
Right.
It's green.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Let's keep it going on FedWatch. Here we go. Next story, Twitter files in the news big time. This is pretty straightforward. Twitter assisted Pentagon psychological influence ops. And there's a lot to the story, but it basically boils down to this. Despite promises to shut down covert state propaganda networks, Twitter documents show that the social media giant directly assisted the U.S. military's influence operations, which comes as no surprise to anyone who has watched this program for any length of time. We've said from day one, Twitter is just an extension of the powers that be.
One of the things I think it was TEB just put out was the dialogue where I forget if it was DOD or FBI is trying to get them to do Russian disinformation. And it's so creepy. And they're having difficulty communicating clearly because they don't want to be too clear, right?
Yeah.
And right. And you watch it go back and forth and you just say, unbelievable. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how many billions they've spent doing this, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
But again, back to the notion of face, you know, they put a face out there like Jack Dorsey or Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk, and they pump the idea that this billionaire rose up to the top, and it's like, no. It's the other way around. You backed him all the way, and now he's up there doing what you want to do.
They're not billionaires. They're government contractors.
Exactly.
Jeff Bezos is a government contractor. Jack Dorsey is a government contractor.
Right. For all intents and purposes, they're actors that play the CEO of a company that's really an arm of the MIC and the banks.
Right. And that's one of the things you saw in pandemic where, you know, basically CEOs weren't making a decision for the shareholders, the customers. They're making a decision. You know, the government has got contracts, the government, everybody's a government, not everybody, but a lot of companies turned out to be just government contractors. I mean, in Naomi Wolf's amazing rant standing in front of Yale, she points out that HHS puts more money in Yale's pockets than the parents paying tuition.
Yeah, so we'll get to that. We have that up as a story this week.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But
the
Twitter files is a good story. You know, that we're now seeing the evidence. But you and I have said this from day one on Money and Markets, which is Jack Dorsey and these guys. They're just agents. That's all they are, just government workers.
Right.
You know? Get out of here. Okay, next story. Now, you're going to love this one. From Epic Times, Epic Health. Gates, Bezos, speaking of the devil, invest in Australian-designed brain implant.
Fancy that.
Yep. So the company here, their interest we're talking about is New York-based Synchron. Okay, and it's set up to compete with Musk's Neuralink. Funded by Australian professors Oxley and Opie. Are they not making up these names?
Torn Oxley.
Professor Opie. It's Tom. The company on December 16th announced that it had closed a $110 million Series C funding round involving Bezos Expeditions and Gates Frontier. The Synchron Switch is a brain-computer interface that is implanted in blood vessels on the surface of the motor cortex of the brain via the jugular vein. So what are we talking about here? What kind of stuff, what kind of magic can this do? Well, they've tested it. So far, 4 Australian paralysis patients have received the implants since undergoing the procedure at Royal Melbourne Hospital in 2020. All of those patients were able to control a computer with their mind, said a guy involved on it, and there were no serious device-related effects. I'd love to know what that really means, but they're not going to tell us.
No.
Yeah. Device. So there were effects, but they weren't device-related.
But let's look at the timing. Right after the Department of Defense issues a $9 billion cloud contract and the Navy another $700 million contract.
Yeah.
So they issue an enormous cloud contract to Google, Oracle, Amazon, and Microsoft. The lead owner, investor of Microsoft and Amazon just happened to buy a company and invest in a company that does brain-machine interface. Do we think there's a connection?
Yeah, right.
And the BIS and the central banks are pushing on doing a CBDC currency. Do we see a connection?
They're not only pushing a CBDC currency, they really recently released a paper, and we'll get to it in another episode, talking about here are the standards for custody of crypto assets. So
the interesting thing is we're watching at the World Economic Forum or various people, you know, whether it's Elon Musk talking about Neuralink, they're all talking about chipping the human race openly.
Wow.
You know, you had the Nokia leader saying, you know, I forget what year it was, but by 2030, you know, we're all going to be chipped. Anyway, so this is all out front, and yet I still am getting feedback that the majority of the American banking community doesn't perceive that they're in danger.
Well, you're kidding me.
No.
Right. Wow. So in other words, the American banking community, for the most part, thinks everything hunky-dory.
I don't think it's hunky-dory, but I don't think they see... You know, they look at these things, the chipping, the CBDC, the digital ID, the cloud contract at DOD and the intelligence agencies. They don't see an integrated picture of the corral snapping around them and where this goes.
Right. They're just like, oh, that's just tech, you know, marching on like it always does.
Right.
Right.
And so, you know, I go back to Russia saying 89 soldiers died because they had their... You know, they didn't know how to use information technology to their advantage, okay? They got killed, right?
Yeah, right.
Because they let the enemy see where they were and target them, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, the cattle, you know, the target is sitting in the field and it's not seeing the enemy approach.
Ah, that's terrible.
It is terrible. Carolyn wrote a template letter to send to your banker about CBDCs and to tell them that you're worried. So, you know, I'll have them put it up in the show notes for Money and Markets, but you know, we've got to educate our bankers.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. Okay. Let's keep it going. Back to the Netherlands. What's going on? Netherlands to buy out and close 3,000 farms to meet climate goals. The Dutch government is planning to buy out and close as many as 3,000 farms in the country, exacerbating an already bitter dispute with growers as leaders attempt to halve the country's nitrogen emissions by 2030. They said they had planned to allocate $25 billion to the buyout plan, which they will use to buy between 2,000 and 3,000 farms and other nitrogen emitters. And they're saying that $25 billion divided by 2,000 or 3,000 is going to come out with an amount well over their property values. If farmers do not agree to the plan, the buyouts could become compulsory. There is no better offer coming, Dutch Nitrogen Minister Christian van der Waal told members of the parliament last week. So that's really the nub of the story. They got a fund. They're going to buy your farm. Get on board.
Right. But But if my understanding about the economics are accurate, they're not buying them, they're stealing them.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So
so when they say there's no better offer coming, that's just wrong.
Well, you, the government announced that you're not going to let them do anything on their land that makes a profit. What do you think it does to the value of the land?
Yeah.
Right. And then you announce you're going to buy the land at a certain price.
Right.
You know, but you've already trashed the value.
Right.
Right. So to me, this is a steal, and it's laid over with all sorts of complicated yakety 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 yak to make it confusing so that people don't understand. Right. They're stealing their land, and you're next.
The Washington Examiner story there was the clearest one I could find on this, but even right. They, as you kind of just said, leave out the part about we're going to not allow you to do this anyway.
Right.
So take the money.
Right.
Right.
This is a very – what's happening to the farmers in the Netherlands is one of the ugliest things I've seen yet.
Wow.
Yeah, because wow. These are – if you look at the farmers in the Netherlands, not only are they unbelievably productive people, they're great people. They're great members of the community. They're the people who make everything go.
Yeah.
So they're pretty loved people.
Yeah.
And admired.
Yeah. And the Dutch government doesn't care. They're going to reduce those emissions by 2030. Come hell or high water.
They don't care about emissions. You know, they got Jeff. Making Jeff Bezos's yacht flying around in corporate planes. What they're doing is they're going to take that land and use it to build homes for immigrants. That's what they're going to do with that land.
Right. Right. Wow. Wow. Right.
And those bringing in those immigrants and, you know, building homes and doing all of that is going to create lots of emissions.
Yeah. Some of whom will be Ukrainian refugees, probably.
Right. You got it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's keep it going. Let's move on to CBDC and crypto. This first story back to FTX and the Wall Street Journal. Carolyn Ellison, associate of FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried, pleads guilty to criminal charges. So she rolled over on him. We saw that coming. She had met with prosecutors. She pleaded guilty to 7 counts, including wire fraud and, interestingly, conspiracy to commit securities fraud, according to her plea agreement, which was signed Monday. Mr. Wang himself pleaded to 4 counts, including wire fraud. So notice conspiracy to commit securities fraud didn't include Mr. Wang. Pray tell who it did include. Probably so, Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yeah, absolutely. But it also gives the SEC jurisdiction.
Well, okay. SEC can't imprison anybody.
No, I know.
Fine. Yeah.
I know, but it brings them in. It's going to be interesting. So do you know who with the Department of Justice is in charge of prosecuting the FTX situation?
No.
Okay, if you get the name, let me know. I want to see
what
the chain of command is, because they may have multiple groups involved, as I suspect. I don't know if you saw it. according to Wall Street on Parade, Sullivan Cromwell is getting paid $2,500 an hour to do the bankruptcy work. One of the partners.
Well, no. That's James Bromley.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. He's the lead guy. He's the lead counsel. If you go on to Pacer and look at the docket, they list all the attorneys there. There are hundreds of attorneys with different parties, but Bromley is lead counsel for the debtors, you know. And
really,
he's managing the whole thing. He's the lead guy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's the top. He's the lead guy. There's a couple other major players. I listened to the first day hearing.
Uh-huh.
In there, but he's clearly the lead guy. There's one guy who has a very thick New York accent, and there's a woman whose New York accent is less thick than Gluckstein is the guy with the thick accent. Anyway, the Wall Street on Parade article about the hourly fees. I thought the hourly fee was $21.50, but I wouldn't swear to that.
I thought it was $25. I could have been wrong, but
anyway.
So he's not getting paid from the $12 million that FTX put up. He's getting paid by the other side.
Yeah, I don't. He's the main debtors guy, isn't he? I'd have to hold on. Let me answer this quickly because I can go right to the docket on my computer. FTX
pacer.
I'm looking at Bromley.
Yeah, he's log in. Docket report. Here we go. Run report. In fact, you know what? I'm going to bring this over just so people can see what I'm talking about when I say the docket. Okay. So let me. Oh, that's right. I got two different size monitors. So I got to shrink it down a little bit and then I'll bring it over. So your viewers can see what the heck I'm talking about when I say the docket. Okay, here we go. This is the docket. You can see here.
Right.
U.S. Bankruptcy Court, U.S. District of Delaware. I've run this report.
It's coming through backwards. Can you flip it?
No, I can't flip it. Okay. I don't know why it would be in backwards.
Oh, no. Anyway. Sorry. It's coming through direct on my computer and flipped on the teleprompter. I don't know why, but
yeah,
just go ahead.
Yeah, because teleprompters are always backwards. Okay.
Yeah.
So you can see the debtor, FTX trading over here. You see that?
Yep.
Can you see that whole red circle? Okay.
Yep.
So the debtor, FTX trading, is represented by these attorneys. And the lead guy is Kimberly Brown. No, she's in there, but she's not. She's with a different firm. That's not the attorney I was talking about earlier. But Bromley's got a whole team. He's from Sullivan and Cromwell. Burke is this guy. He is represents somebody else. He's with Quinn Emanuel, a very, very well-known firm. Actually, for my money, I would pay Quinn Emanuel way more money than Sullivan and Cromwell. Anyway, but you can see these guys. Sullivan and Cromwell, look how many attorneys you got here. Jacob Croce.
Jesus.
And Andrew Dietrichs. Nicole Friedlander, that's who I was talking about. Brian Gluckstein, that's the guy with the thick accent. Alexa Kransley. So all these, look how many attorneys of record are on FTX. Okay, those are just the ones that are up to. The trustee, okay, is these two. Right. She's really good. Juliet Sarkisian, I like her a lot. Very sensible in her presentations. But you can see all these attorneys. I'm just scrolling through
so
attorneys.
Who this next batch, they're representing?
The creditor committee, the official committee of unsecured creditors.
Right.
Okay. And that's Paul Hastings, this guy, right. Luke Despins, Erez Gilad. I don't know, you know, how to pronounce these names. Anyway, so they've got, and then they got this firm, Young Conaway. That's his local counsel in Delaware.
Right.
And then here are the docket entries. Okay. So you could see this. So the bankruptcy is filed on the 11th. And then you got all these docket entries. And if you scroll down, I wonder how long the docket is now. Here we are. It's January 4th, right? Look at this. This is unbelievable. There are already 350.
The judges go crazy because they can't read it all.
300. That just cost me, by the way, to run that $3.
Right.
That's why you only run these so often because it adds up. So then you click through these docket items. Anyway, they had their first day.
So Bromley is getting paid out of the $12 million. So Samuel Bankman-Fried puts up $12 million to pay Sullivan Cromwell to play bankruptcy attorney, and now they've got control of that pot after they've jammed him.
Yeah. Day. Oops, let me go over here. Let me search on. Day. First day pleadings. Anyway, you can go in here and you can, if you download the right PDF, you can listen to hearings in the court. And you can find out what's going on in that case. Right. But it's a lot of procedure and dry minutiae that you got to wait. I mean, like the first day hearing was 2 hours long for maybe 15 minutes of stuff you could understand.
Right.
You know, it's super dry. And anyway, and you saw that docket. It's huge. This case is only 2 months old. It's not even 2 months old. They've already got 350 entries in that docket.
Right. So
this is a big deal.
So, you know, the system I saw was whenever they do a major fraud, they put aside a budget and you get somebody like AIG managing it. And situations like this, they hide behind complexity and they have the resources to bury you with paper, and they do. And the only person who can deal with the situation is navigate the paper blizzard. It's a paper blizzard.
It's a
paper blizzard. And that's one of the reasons that it's very hard for reporters to stay in and deal with it.
It's right. very difficult. You have to, if you're a reporter, I mean, realistically, you have to know someone who's involved at some level.
Right.
Even if it's a clerk in the Delaware right. court, or you have to know somebody who's got, here's a scuttlebutt. Like, right. what's this really about?
Well, that's why one of the ways we won is we would create these long narratives that describe what happened and why, and basically yeah. give you the insider's view, and then link up all the documents so that we could take something like the docket and turn it into a story that somebody can understand.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. That's a lot of work. That's
a lot of
long hours in a stuffy conference room.
The first one took us 4 months. We had four people working on the documents, two attorneys and two law firms. It took us 4.5 months to do the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's
very expensive.
That sounds about right. Yeah. That sounds about right.
Right.
Yeah. How many attorneys?
Well, there were two attorneys. One attorney at one firm that really had to read it, but there were two attorneys at another firm that really had to approve it. But I had Carolyn Betts and a young attorney with my team of four people doing the documents or the IT work or the paralegal yeah. work.
Yeah.
So there were really six attorneys, but it was really two attorneys doing all the work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but if you look at that team for 4.5 months, you're talking about a lot of money. So remember, yeah. I was paying for it out of my pocket.
Right. $2,500 an hour for Bromley.
No, I wasn't paying $2,500 an
yeah,
hour.
Yeah, right. I know you are. Those are new rates.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Nobody put up $12 million before they hit me.
It was a financial crisis. I was at General Block, and that was when I first started seeing some uh-huh. senior partners with whose rates had climbed up north of 1,000. It was like, whoa, $1,000 an hour.
Wow.
No, it was around that same time that it came out that Glenn Hubbard's rate as a consultant, as an economist, was $1,200 an hour, which is, you know, that's $20 a minute. Not a lot of scratch.
Well, that's a lot of money to say everything. I mean,
yeah.
that's what he would do. Right. He would say whatever you needed right. him to say. He'd, and he had right. a that's, very impressive resume.
Exactly right. Yeah. Right. Cost a lot of money. Okay, right. let's keep it going. Crypto, here we go. Another Sam Bankman-Fried story from the LA Times. Emails revealed Fried's courtship of federal regulators, and he really loves the CFTC. As CEO of FTX, Bankman-Fried hired multiple former federal regulators who helped connect him with top officials at the CFTC, the agency he hoped would be charged with regulating his industry. Many of Bankman-Fried's top deputies were former regulators. Ryan Miller, and this is the most interesting one, Ryan Miller, FTX general counsel, previously served as legal counsel to Gary Gensler, the then CFTC chairman, who is now chairman of the FTC.
Now, Ryan CFTC. Miller had worked at Sullivan & Cromwell, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, right? He sure had. Yeah. You got it yeah. right. Yep.
Right.
Mark Wiegand, also CFTC. Joe Summers, another former CFTC commissioner, served on the board of directors. So he gets all these CFTC guys in there and basically just, you know, buys the influence. You know, he sets up all these meetings and dinners and, you know, and then hires them for a lot of money, you know, to get their way.
In my experience, if you look at what made this thing go, it was deeper than that.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
Yeah, it was deeper than that.
Yeah, the regulators weren't the real issue.
Right.
They were the face.
This was an operation. This operation had a goal.
Yeah, right.
And I think this operation achieved its goals. It was successful.
The ring of regulators he had around him, that just gives it a gloss of plausibility.
Right.
Right. Right. Yeah, it was a total operation. Still right. don't know where his money came from.
Right.
Where'd you get your money, Sam? You know? Still don't know. You know? Okay. Let's turn to Farmageddon and our only video this week. This is from Monday Night Football.
This is tough.
Yeah, this is tough. This is a receiver. I mean, sorry, the defender for the Bills. I'm just going to flip over here, and we're going to look at a play where this guy makes a tackle. The guy to watch is this guy. You'd think it was this guy. It's not. It's this guy back here, and he's going to come and tackle this guy. And this is I forget his name. What's this guy's name?
Damar
Hamlin.
Yeah,
Damar Hamlin is his name.
And so he's going to make this tackle. This is Monday Night Football. Let's just watch this. And you don't need to, I'll play it again. I mean, the clip itself has a replay. So here it is.
Yeah, it's not what any of us want to see. And now everybody's around him and just hope that he's going to be okay.
So we'll take another break here in Cincinnati.
So he makes the tackle, and you see he stands up quickly, and down he goes.
Right. His heart stopped. Cardiac arrest.
Cardiac arrest. 24 years old.
Right. In perfect shape.
24 years old.
Right.
Yep. Yep. And so there's a lot of, well, there's a ton of controversy around this. Starting with the fact that Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, wanted that game to go forward, and the NFL was going to wait 5 minutes and then push the game forward, and now they deny that. But a guy, an announcer named Joe Buck, says, no, 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 I was there. You guys were going to go forward with the game, and it wasn't until you realize, you know, people are like, holy, your players are crying, you know, and
right.
Can't go forward. This guy, this man's life
well, you
is
had in, several in, of the major players on the Bills who just refused to play.
Yeah, they weren't
they
right.
Were,
there was no way.
And you have the scene of the Bills all coming together as a team and praying. Now, we yeah. know that one of the players who got fired because he wouldn't take the shot had just recently come back, and we don't know what the negotiation was. But you know,
right.
we know the vaccine mandate was a controversial issue at the Bills because, you know, this guy got fired.
Well, the mandate was from the Bills. I don't think the NFL itself actually had a mandate.
No, it was from the Bills.
From the Bills, right.
Right. So we know there was mandate controversy at the Bills level, and this got fired.
Right.
This guy got fired. So
yeah, he walked. He wasn't going to do it, and so he left. And he circled. He went to Tampa Bay for a while, and that didn't work out. And then he came back to the Bills. So why he came back to the Bills, this is a receiver whose name eludes me. But he comes back.
Cole. His name is Cole.
Cole comes back 3 games ago, comes back for the Dolphins game and then the Bears game and then the Bengals game, which we just saw. And it's like, well, why did he come back? Either he got vaccinated or the Bills are getting up against the playoffs and they want him back. They want everybody they can. We don't know.
So the thing that's been so interesting about this, apparently he went to the hospital. He's on an incubator. And
Hamlin.
And yeah.
Yep.
And his heart stopped again. In the hospital.
Yep.
So yes. He's been resuscitated twice, 24, perfect health. But this is someone who's very well liked by his teammates and the audience. It's from
yeah.
He's Pittsburgh. He's a Pennsylvania boy, so he's up north. And if you look at the emails I've been getting from subscribers who live in Buffalo or who were watching the game for a variety of reasons, you know, they're fans of the other team. You know, my understanding from the people in Buffalo is everybody immediately knew that this was the injection.
Yeah.
And what was astonishing, I got on the internet right after I started getting emails from subscribers, and they already had videos of doctors explaining that this was a particular kind of heart attack, and this does
right.
happen in extreme sports.
Know.
You know, already the cover
Johnny,
story.
Dr. Right. Johnny on the spot, they got the story right. right there.
Well, but here's what happened. You had a lot of fans who came together at the hospital to pray for him. And apparently they just did a blue light thing on Niagara Falls to honor him and sort of pray for the situation. So this is kind of blowing up. And one of the things I think you pointed out that the coach is getting paid $63 million a year.
That's Goodell. That's the commissioner.
Oh, the commissioner. It's not the coach. Okay,
no,
so he's getting paid $63 million. You know, and he wants the game to go forward, and people
yeah.
are, I don't know, this has triggered something.
Yeah.
It's triggered something, and Mr. Reality.
Right. There's a crack in the mask. We get to see who you really are.
Right.
You wanted that game to go forward, you monster.
Right. Right. And well, here's what's interesting. Rasmussen just came out with a new poll. 49% of Americans think the increase in all-cause mortality. They don't use these terms, but the increase in all-cause mortality is coming from the injections. 49%.
Yeah.
How long right. is it going to be before it's 80%?
Yeah, and yet the official explanation never even admits or considers the injection as being even a possible cause or even related to the fatality or
so
to
the first
to the
subscriber
injuries.
who posted something about this said, everybody knows. Everybody on the team knows, and everybody knows, and all the fans know it was the vaccination.
Yeah.
They all know.
The Leonard Cohen song, Everybody Knows.
Everybody knows.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no secret there.
Right. So,
but they get these official explanations. It's never, like I said, they don't even admit the possibility that the vaccine could be an agent or even any part of the cause of the problem.
All the king's horses and all the king's men cannot put this back in the box.
Right.
That's
reality meeting up with Mr. Global there.
Right. Right.
And in part of the reality is the public is starting to turn big time.
Right.
Now,
Bills have a big problem.
NFL's got a bigger problem.
Right.
I mean, you know, Roger Goodell getting $63 million. Why does Roger Goodell get $63 million a year? Is he going to quit and go write operas or write the next Star Wars or dunk basketballs for the Bulls? No, he's not going to do any of those things. The reason you're paid $63 million in this day and age is you're covering up crimes. That's what you're doing.
Right.
That's what you're getting paid for.
Right.
That's just how things work. Sorry.
Right.
You know, he's got no native talent to justify that. That's ludicrous.
I used to really get frustrated. You know, back in the 90s, you'd see these feminists who wanted equal pay. And you'd say, don't you understand what they're getting paid to do? And the reason there are no women in the positions is they don't trust women to do, you know, the organized crime stuff. So don't you understand you don't want equal pay here? And not only that, you can't earn equal pay because you're not willing to do what they're doing. It was so strange because, you know, they just couldn't see it.
Yeah. That part, I think there's a lot going on there. But anyway.
If Naomi Wolf can come around, everybody can come around.
Exactly. You got it. Big time. And we'll get to her.
Right.
But let's right now go to Farmageddon. This next article, I just like read this. Like, this is, what journal is this? So here's the article. It's from the National Library of Medicine. The pharmaceutical industry is dangerous to health, period. Further proof with COVID-19. So I'm just going to read this so you can get a flavor for the article. The COVID-19 period highlights a huge problem that has been developing for decades, the control of science by industry. In the 50s, the tobacco industry set the example, which the pharmaceutical industry followed. Since then, the latter has been regularly condemned for illegal marketing, misrepresentation of experimental results, dissimulation of information about the dangers of drugs, and considered as criminal. Now, we're looking at you, Pfizer. So it goes on like that. I'm like, well, who is writing this? And I look at this publication, I'm like, well, maybe this is some, like, I don't know, National Library of Medicine. Is this some new organization? No, this National Library of Medicine, this started in 1836, this publication.
Right.
This has been around a long time. This is a very credible publication. It's talking like that. Like, what? What's going on here?
Reality.
Right.
Right. It's like when you, I don't know if you had time to read the mass formation versus mass atrocity article, you know, but that's another example of, at some point, if you sit down and unpack the gaslighting, you can destroy it.
Yeah.
That we're not looking at some psychological event. We're looking at a mass atrocity.
Right.
Right.
Right. It's a mass atrocity. Speaking of which, let's go to our next story of Farmageddon. In reality, this from the Vigilant Fox, the slope goes the wrong way. What are they talking about? Top insurance analyst says high vax regions show a 15% higher mortality rate in 2022 than 2021. Mr. Josh Sterling is a highly recognized insurance research analyst, and his eye-opening testimony during Ron Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine hearing made quite a splash on December 7th. I'm just going to cut to the graph that he's talking about here. Let me click on this guy. There you go. So here you go with this. The y-axis in all these cases is doses per population. So doses per 100 population. The farther you go on the right, the more doses of the vaccine you're getting. And you see here, all-cause mortality is this axis. So what are these graphs showing? They're showing, this is the slope going the wrong way.
Right. He's showing that the more doses you get, the more mortality you get. Right. The slope is indeed going the wrong way. 15% the wrong way.
Josh Sterling is the insurance analyst who's and with a very impressive resume who's been supporting Ed Dowd. This is where Ed Dowd's been getting a lot of his numbers. And Sterling, my impression of Sterling is he's very, very good.
Yeah.
He's very good. This is a guy who knows what he's doing.
It would appear so, yeah. If you poke through those graphs, this is not a guy getting up there and winging it.
Right.
You know, those are pretty advanced scatter plots with a lot of data points in them.
Well, if we're at 49% of Americans thinking, you know, the injections are causing death and disability. I mean, Dowd is now saying, I told you what Skidmore reported is one of his latest interviews. He says basically 7,500 people a day are dropping out of the labor force, 2,500 from death and 5,000 from disability.
Wow.
And Skidmore says that matches up with his numbers.
No kidding.
You know, so that's, you know, 2 to 3 million of people a year. It's 1% of the, more than 1% of the workforce every year. So.
But the labor force starts at 16. So you get, every year you get a new crop of 16-year-olds joining the, just how it works.
Right. So I go back to, if we're at 50% now on a Rasmussen poll, I don't know when we get to 80%, but it's going to be this year.
You think?
Yep, I think.
Wow. Yeah, and yet the more I look at CBDC, it's like, you know, once the CBDC is in place, it's ball game. Then it doesn't matter.
Right, but they can't get CBDC in place this year.
Exactly, they can't get it in place.
Right, and that's why they want the WHO treaty.
Right. The BIS document is saying 2025, but it is a preliminary step.
Which is aggressive. So if you're the central bankers, you can shut people down. You can create demand destruction through the fiscal mechanism. You can create demand destruction by rolling off your bond portfolio. You can create demand destruction by interest rates. But all those ways of doing demand destruction, John, get the general population to realize you're the bad guy. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but if you can get the WHO treaty and shut down wherever you want, whenever you want through the healthcare establishment, you're safe.
Yeah.
Because no one will be able to connect the dots, they think.
Right. That makes sense.
That's why they want the WHO treaty.
That makes total sense.
Right.
Yep. Meanwhile, back in Farmageddon, this next story, this is a Substack story, which we'll get to in a minute. But my highlighting does not work, apparently, on Substack. I don't know if that's new or what, but there's a Substack story, oddly enough, later on in this episode. But this story here, it's about how Health One could become a global One Health disaster. So this is from Canada. Health One basically means, hey, you know, it's not just human health, it's animal health too. We're all kind of integrated on this big blue planet. And so this boils down to veterinary mRNA injections are being fast-tracked for rollouts, and they could. So the concept of One Health is that the health of people, animals, and the environment are interlinked and interdependent. The health of one can impact the health of all. But this guy goes on and says, hey, you know, there's problems with injecting animals because basically this stuff can get into your food. You know, when these pathogens can get into your food, do you really want that? The answer, obviously, no.
But no.
The insanity is of injecting animals. Now you understand kind of why there's an interest in doing this.
So our annual wrap-up, the theme is Elsa von Hamelin is writing a piece on synthetic food with a focus on lab-grown meat. And, you know, I said to somebody as I've been trying to read it and digest it, if you haven't been scared to death yet to go get to know your local farmers and find your local food supply, this will do it. Whether it's the mRNA vaccines going into animals or synthetic lab-grown meat, it's frightening.
Yeah, yeah, right. It is. And then on that note, let's go to the next story in Farmageddon. This is Judicial Watch. FDA records show a significant number of mRNA test rats born with skeletal deformations. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Judicial Watch said it received 699 pages of records from the Department of Health and Human Services regarding data Moderna submitted to the FDA on its mRNA COVID-19 vaccine. And this is from Moderna document, this block quote here. I'll read part of it. mRNA-1273-related variations in skeletal examination included statistically significant increases in the number of F1 rats with one or more wavy ribs and one or more rib nodules. So they admit right out of the bat it's statistically significant, increased number of rats with these wavy ribs. These skeletal variations are structural changes that do not impact development or function of a developing embryo, are considered reversible, nice use of the passive tense there, and passive voice, and are often correlated with maternal toxicity and or other indicators of developmental toxicity. Therefore, these common skeletal variations were not considered adverse.
Jesus.
So in other words, even though we have these deformations and rib nodules, don't worry about it. It's not adverse. We're decreeing right now, it's not adverse, nothing to worry about, full speed ahead with this mRNA vaccine. Yep. You like that?
Felons. They're felons.
Yeah. Don't worry. It changes their genetic makeup. It messes up their ribs, but no problem. Right. Not a big deal. It's statistically significant, too. We know it is, you know?
So I remember getting called into the secretary's office and being told, you know, this is how this is supposed to go. And what he was describing was a violation of the law that would hurt people.
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't follow those orders, but, you know, that's what you would be told. Here's how this is going to go. And that's the result.
Right. This is it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah. Unbelievable. On that note, let's turn to pushback. In our first article on pushback from the Defender, I love this. A 6 non-compliance strategy for protecting kids and teens in 2023. This is just a practical guide. Let's just get into it. Choose homeschooling. Just kind of pop through them here. Choose homeschooling. Stop the poisoning. So now a critical mass of parents is coming to see vaccines as a con man trick. Understanding that promises of vaccine safety were false and conflict of interest riddled well before the COVID-19 shots came on.
Right.
In other words, it's not the problem with the vaccines isn't just the COVID-19 vaccine. So just stop getting vaccinated. Reduce screen time. Great idea. I wish my own nephews and nieces would abide by it. Teach kids to use cash, non-plastic. That's very sensible.
I just got a couple kids' piggy banks so that they can learn to put coins and save with coins.
That's really good.
Yeah.
I'm becoming aware of kids who are like almost afraid of cash. Like, are you kidding me? Don't fall for mental health threats. Be wary of recommendations coming from the CDC. I get this. An agency so accustomed to conflicts of interest and fake science that it is not embarrassed to use the same PR firm as Big Pharma.
Right.
Because it is Big Pharma. Stop financing the enemy. And here's Naomi Wolf. Wolf described conversations with parents at Yale who said their children had begged them not to speak out, not to call a dean, not to advocate for them, to protect them from these injections in any way due to fear of reprisal and expulsion. However, parents have a duty to make sure their young people understand what they are trading off for prestige, including potentially their health, their future fertility, or their life. Here's one more. And finally, say no to the control grid. Although this article is focused on measures to protect young people, the control grid in the form of interventions like digital IDs, vaccine passports, and CBDCs is also coming after adults.
Right.
There you go. All good advice.
Oh, great advice. And what's remarkable, a lot of people will look at these and say, well, they're just small things. Wrong. If enough people do them, it's a tsunami. And it's the kind of tsunami we've seen when you look at Meta stock, Disney stock, you know, people are walking away.
Yeah. Right. Big time. And we're going to see that in a chart coming up. You mentioned synthetic food. There's a chart coming up. Like I did a double take on that one. Like,
that's called rejection. Right? That is called rejection.
Whoa. That's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a Dikembe Mutombo style. Like,
block well, the ball.
Well, it's funny because I've
asked
a lot of people about sort of their reaction to Beyond Meat. You know, when they go into the store or when they go to some of the franchises have pushed it, and they're just like, ooh, it's really.
Yeah.
And that's, and you know, that expression that I get from them translates right into the stock price.
Yeah. Boy. Okay. More on pushback. Next story from Vaccine Impact, even though it really doesn't have to do with Vaccine Impact, it's really about Substack. Protecting your privacy should be a high priority in 2023. Beware of Substack. I remember earlier I told you that the highlighting wasn't working, and then I read this. I'm like, oh, okay. Why be wary of Substack? What's the problem here? Beware of Substack? There was an article by a woman named Elizabeth Dwoskin writing for the Washington Post who complained at the beginning of the year that Substack was earning millions of dollars from anti-vaccine content that was banned on big social media sites like Twitter and Facebook. And these writers who were being banned, these anti-vaccine writers, are moving over to Substack. What's the problem? There are huge Silicon Valley big tech investors behind Substack, including some of the same investors behind those big tech media social sites that were rejecting the anti-vax content. But here we get to another problem. So one problem is they're backed by big tech. Another problem is I've tried subscribing to a few Substack authors, and when their newsletter is delivered to you via email, all the links in the email are appended with Google tracking codes. Yeah, so I know at the very least that Substack is making data available to Google. What kind of data are they making available? Well, here you go. There's a punch list. Your first and last name, your email address, your phone number, your payment details, location, your photograph, all this stuff's getting hoovered right up to Google. I'm convinced it's those codes that are blocking my highlighting on the document.
Yeah.
Why can't I highlight these documents? And we're going to go to another pushback story. In fact, the next one from CJ Hopkins from Substack, I can't highlight it
right.
either.
Right. No, I think I've always believed Substack is a honey trap.
Really?
Yeah.
Just
everything you put on Substack, just make sure you back it up.
Yeah. Well, I started a Substack thinking, well, there's some way out. Is there any crevice of the internet that is safe? Or do I have to say, you have to start your own website?
I'm happy to put up a website for you. We'll back it up and you just do whatever you want. You control it.
Like Odyssey, Rumble, BitChute, they're all like, everything is compromised. Everything.
Everything digital is compromised. The goal of the digital system currently is to compromise you. That's its goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, let's go to more pushback. This is CJ Hopkins, but this is Substack, The Year of the Gaslighter. This is a great piece.
Yeah.
And what he does here, which I would be able to quickly scroll to if I had my highlighting, which I don't. Where's this damn thing? I know if I scroll down. Okay, here we go. Here's what he does. He goes through chronologically the year 2022. The gaslighting got underway in January when the corporate media and other major organs of the new normal right started suddenly discovering that the official COVID narrative was inaccurate, or, you know, a bunch of lies. And then he goes through month by month what was going on. And it's just a really good review of the year.
Yeah.
Anyway. He just goes through these things one by one. But
well, here's what's interesting. If you look, I remember in March 2020 when I tried to tell everybody, you know, all these 10 things are a lie. And if you look at where we are now, we've gotten to the point where the gaslighting isn't working. You know, Mr. Reality is now encroaching and Mr. Global's narratives aren't working.
Yeah.
So
there are too many mystery realities coming through the doors and the windows. You can't keep them out anymore.
Right. Gaslighting isn't working.
No, there's too many vectors for the truth to get through.
Right.
Now, the gaslighting is too big. Your lies are too big. So the number of refutations is growing exponentially. They're coming through the air conditioning ducts. You can't stop it.
That's right? Why I have no idea how this will go, but you know, there is something big afoot.
Yeah.
Mr. Reality is knocking hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And Mr. Global, as a result, is kind of like we alluded to earlier, to me, from where I sit, looks like Mr. Global is losing the foot race. Like, you're not going to make it to CBDC before Reality overcomes you and tackles you in a big way. Yeah, it's 2 years off.
So I think they believe if they can get the WHO treaty, they can make it.
Maybe, yeah.
But they got to have the WHO treaty. They also, you know, it's funny because I was talking to one ally about the WHO treaty and they were insistent. I don't care if they get the treaty or not. People will not comply. They will not comply.
Right, right.
So I don't know. I would not want to be Mr. Global.
No, not right now. It's a bad time and it's getting worse. But and on that note, let's go to our last story and pushback. I've wondered about this story. I love this. In Florida, health freedom activists exert influence over a major hospital. When I saw this, like NPR, it's an odd place for this story to be coming from, but we'll get to that. This is interesting. While most of the 6,000 hospitals in the U.S. are privately run, about 200 are controlled by publicly elected board members. So in Sarasota, with seats opening on the Memorial Hospital's board earlier this year, a group of political activists opposed to COVID protocols saw an opportunity. And now, today, the hospital has three new board members who question the effectiveness of vaccines and spread medical misinformation. While they're a minority on the 9-person board, their victory has thrown the hospital board's typically quiet meetings into chaos. There's no more ratification, no more rubber stamping of Pfizer's agenda. We actually have to have debate and discussion now. NPR is up in arms about this development. And here they go, and I get an expert to say, this kind of health freedom propaganda rhetoric, it's not just an academic discussion. It's endangering the lives of Americans, and in this case, Floridians, said Dr. Peter Hotez, a vaccine expert.
Oh, this guy, have you seen his videos? This guy's a piece of work.
I already know that from the last part here.
Yeah.
Hotez estimates that 200,000 Americans needlessly died in the last half of 2021 and early 22 because they weren't vaccinated. As a societal force, that's an enormous killer, he said. Interesting, because my own estimates are that it's a million dead bodies in the other direction.
Right.
Including
this guy is a flamboyant gaslighter.
Yeah. Well, you know he is because NPR, the story about Florida, they gotta go all the way to Texas to find someone to spew this nonsense. You can't get a local guy and they're the board to say, No. Yeah. Anyway. But that's it for stories this week on.
So we got some charts.
Yeah, we got a bunch of charts for sure. So let's cut to those.
And the charts are really just a roundup of what we saw last year. So,
but there's some surprises in these charts, I think.
Yeah.
Let's get to them. Here we go.
Okay, so the dollar, U.S. dollar is back down, but it's still very strong for the last year period.
Yeah.
And I think the Fed has no choice but to keep it strong. And they're going to use the dollar bear trap globally to make it very difficult for people to leave the model. So we see the petro going out of the petrodollar, but the market share they have of both the debt and currency is significant. So the dollar remains dominant. And I think we could see the dollar head back up to that 114 this year.
Yeah. There were some charts on a recent Wolf Richter article that show the dollar is dominant. It's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Right.
Anyway. All right. Next chart. This is versus dollar versus the ruble. This is surprising.
Yeah. The guy who outperformed the dollar was the ruble. So, we see the ruble sort of get hit by the sanctions and trade off, but then get strong and basically... You know, the ruble has performed very well against the dollar relative to other currencies. So,
And it's a close foot race, though.
Yep.
You know, it's coming back after a year to parity.
Right. Right.
Anyway, okay. Next chart.
But if the goal of the sanctions was to hurt the Russian currency, it didn't work.
No, I know. You query whether that's the real goal of the sanctions.
Right. Hurt, you know. Exactly. No, I think it's to shift the energy east.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
This is just a quick look at the global markets. This is the S&P versus the European ETF versus the large cap China stocks. And they just ended up the year very close, almost parity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much closer than the Derby ended up being, actually. This is a three-horse race that was very tight. And we saw that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, it was neck and neck. Okay. This is FinViz 1 year.
Yeah, so orange juice finally beat out oil and gas.
Yeah, that was the final. VIX, look at this.
So this is such a, you know, we're back to, we're no longer in a world of cheap energy. We're no longer in a world of cheap capital, and there's real risk. And you know something, for most people, if you started trading the markets 20 years ago, you've never lived in a world of real risk.
Right.
You've never had Mr. Reality knocking at your door.
Right. You've never seen non-zero interest rates, really.
Right, right.
You know, and if you go back and look, lumber notably is down near the bottom, you know, as house prices decline. But then again, oats is down too. Quite a few things are down.
Well, but here's the thing. The Fed interest rate strategy is working.
Yes, it is.
You've taken a lot of the air out of the commodities. You know, commodities were off to a big bull year, and you've taken the air out.
Yep, big time. Okay, let's keep it going. Oh, this is interesting. Silver.
So this is the safety trade.
Yeah.
Silver outperformed gold, you know, just coming back at the end of the year. But neither of them performed beautifully. I mean, they were both in positive. It's better than S&P down 20%. But if you look at how bonds perform, bonds had a terrible year. The message is real assets count. And, you know, this has been the year that the 60-40 portfolio got slaughtered as an investment concept. So, you know, for a lot of people, their bonds performed worse than their stocks. So bonds did not balance you away from the volatility at all. But if you look at safety, precious metals were a much, much better year than bonds.
Yeah, it's like 2008 where precious metals were up, you know, 5 or 10%.
Right.
But that beat the S&P 500 being down 37.5%.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. That's a big win up.
So our 2%, gold 4%. And silver wrap up is just the PDF goes up today, and I would encourage anybody if you're trying to learn about gold and silver, it's a great tool to help you do it.
Cool. Very good. Okay, let's keep it going. Ah, this one. Look at this.
So I just wanted to show you the politics here. We started off the year hearing how wonderful renewable energy was and we're going to be green. The only guys who made a lot of money was XLE is the entire oil industry ETF. So it's got the equipment and service companies as well as the production. So, well, now we're showing 47% at one point. The last time we looked at this, it was up 58%. QQQ is Meta and Amazon and, you know, it's the FANGs. It's down 34%, significantly worse than the S&P. And Beyond Meat, the lab, you know, the plant meat is down. Well, now it's 80%. When I looked at it, last time I looked at it, it was down 85%. But needless to say, consumer rejection is being delivered to whether it's, you know, Mark Zuckerberg walking around in cyberspace with a virtual reality headset or somebody trying to encourage you to read, you know, to eat burgers that are made with plant, you know, GMO soy.
Uh-huh.
The consumer is saying, you know, take your creepy people and get the hell out of my life.
It's a major rejection. I mean, down 80. That's a year.
Right.
It's 1 year you're down over 80%.
Well,
sorry.
Crypto's down 70-80%. So
holy cow.
Yeah.
Yeah. The era.
Apparently people want real things.
Shocking.
You know, they need real resources to deal with an 18% inflation. They need, you know, they need to feed their kids real food. they need to drive a real car. They need to have a company that can make a profit and give them a dividend. They don't have time to wander around in cyberspace buying digital real estate, you know, when they're having trouble getting enough money to feed their kids.
You're right.
Right.
You're right.
Right.
That's Mr. Reality. That chart right there.
That's Mr. Reality.
That's Mr. Reality. Kicking Mr. Global's, you know what.
Well, I mean, if I put Visa in there, it would be up, you know, it would be, I think Visa was down 4%.
Yeah,
versus the S&P, because dividend, Visa has a business.
Yeah.
And Visa can process, you know, I think Visa can process maybe 200,000 times more transactions a minute than Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Or a second than Bitcoin. I mean, the number is so phenomenal, it's unbelievable.
Right.
And they have a business and they generate a dividend. Fancy that.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to our final chart, which is, this is an interesting one, another interesting one. Baltic Dry Index.
Right. So Baltic Dry Index is just really tracking the global trade.
Right.
And here's the thing. If you're choking on dollar debt, whether you're a country or a company, and it's getting, you know, global trade is, you know, not growing, it's getting harder and harder in a world of expensive energy and expensive capital to earn a dollar to pay back your debt. And so you're choking.
Yeah.
And one of the big questions is, the way we're going to get demand destruction in 2023 is by having a major recession. If you look at if you look at the euro dollar curve market, it's saying, you know, we could get a major recession. Now, when you look at the Baltic Dry Index, that doesn't look like a major recession yet to me, but let's see.
Well, let's put some numbers on it. You see 1250 there. That's what it is now.
Right.
If you look over left, I put a label on there. It started at 2217.
Right.
That's down, you know, 43-44%.
Yeah, that's a downward trend.
That's a big drop off.
That's a downward trend.
Yeah.
And if you look at the bottom that you hit in September.
Right.
You know, if you keep moving down and get a lower, you know, what's called a lower low.
Yeah, it was lower than 1,000.
Right. If we get a lower low, then people are going to start getting scared.
Yeah, that's not looking good. I mean, that's the very tail end of that curve.
Right.
That's off a cliff, you know.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah, I mean, the pain does not appear to be over.
Nope.
Anyway.
Pain's not over.
That wraps it up for charts.
Yep.
Yeah.
So a couple of things happening at Solaria I wanted to point out.
Yeah, you want to hit Hero of the Week?
Yeah. Hero of the Week is Dr. Michael Mortz, who is one of the German pathologists who absolutely provided the scientific proof that the vaccines are killing people. You know, it's a remarkable story, and I would encourage everybody to go read it. And, you know, this is one of the great heroes of medicine and science, no doubt about it. It's very helpful to the Doctors for COVID Ethics work. So I would encourage you to read it. And Michael, you know, the information is so technical and complex. Dr. Michael Palmer helped our team write the Hero.
Interesting. Yeah, check that out.
Yeah, and he's got it. He's part of it is he got his work published, which is remarkable. So Michael Mortz, German pathologist. Then we went ahead and did our backcasting.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
It was so funny. We had 9 people come together on December 30th, and the backcasting story is it's 2030, freedom reigns. The World Economic Forum is bankrupt. Klaus Schwab is in a state of depression. And so all the people gather to celebrate, you know, the fact that freedom won and to talk about what a pivotal year 2023 was that made all the difference. And then they each tell their stories of what happened in 2023. And of course, it's all over the map because the health people are talking about health and another person's talking about food and farming. And Carolyn Betts is talking about legislative and regulatory changes. It was quite remarkable. And the thing that was so amazing about it, John, is all the people who participated came out the other side feeling so great about the possibilities. Really? You know, you just, you walk into your imagination and you realize, oh, we won. And then you start talking about how it happened and you start realizing, oh, I could do this. I could do this. I could do this. I don't know. It just felt great. We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah,
anyway,
I'll bet. I realized that last week when we did the annual show, like, wow, the resistance put up a lot of wins this year.
Yeah.
2022.
Yeah, when you look at it all together, you realize, wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're going to do the same thing, the same process on Financial Rebellion this week and next. But at the end of the backcasting, Orrick Onager said, look, you know, you go get your friends and you do a backcasting. And, you know, it's one of these processes where you come up with 50 stupid ideas, but out of those 50, you get these two genius ideas.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Yeah, that you would never have thought of if you weren't free to be stupid. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's kind of a stupid process. But I don't know. I encourage everybody to do it. It's fun. It's really, really fun. Anyway.
Very cool.
So the backcasting, and we made it public. So our weekly interview. And I would point out this year for 2023, we're going to publish our weekly interviews. Instead of publishing them on Thursday, we're going to publish them on Tuesday. So that the weekly interview goes up Tuesday, Money and Markets goes up Thursday, and then Ask Catherine goes up Friday. So we're not just bunching it all into Thursday.
Yeah,
so it's spread out during the week. Anyway,
and that's the schedule revision you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So Money and Markets doesn't change, but Ask Catherine goes up on Friday, and the weekly interview goes up on Tuesday, and that way we have content going up. We were putting all the commentaries up that announced the next week's schedule on Saturday, but we're spreading those out as well. So things are going up every day. And if you click on what's new, you can see, you know, it's easy to see what's going up.
Yeah, so, that's smart. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this week, this year, we're going to send John more feedback from the subscribers.
Yeah. Actually, that brings up a point. You know, I have a little folder called Tales from the Front. And there was one about a telephone conversation. You remember that? With Harlan Clark about check processing.
Right. So apparently we're being told by one subscriber that check processing companies are being inundated by orders, including from people who've never used checks before.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
See if I can get that a little bit bigger. Here we go. Yeah, it's a check processing company. Anyway, so the person gets on the phone and talks on the phone with somebody in the check processing department. I needed to have a sales rep handle it. Anyway, she said she's worked there 3 years and she's never seen anything like it. People are almost like frantic to get checks.
So they're all working overtime shifts.
Yeah. Yeah, but the most interesting was learning that Harlan Clark, this is the company, has been flooded since October with requests for checks.
Right.
And this representative says she talks to people every day who have never used checks, and now all of a sudden they want to place an order. And their reps are working 12-hour shifts. They're obviously understaffed. She said she's worked there for 3 years and she's never seen anything like it. People are almost, people seem almost frantic to get checks.
Right.
That's great. That's
great.
Fantastic news. So that's the kind of tales from the front I sort of alluded to in an episode or two ago, saying, you know, that kind of on the ground information, that's got real value.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's just the eyes and the ears. You know, you got a lot of subscribers. It's a lot of eyes and a lot of ears on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, send us the intelligence from the front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
Okay. And so we'll see what happens next week. But I got a feeling we're going to be talking about Mr. Reality all year long.
Yeah. Well, he came out of the gate strong to kick off 2023.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Yeah. Okay. Well, John, have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you next week. Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
Thank you for joining us on the Salier Report. You have a great first, second week of 2023.